This is an iHeart podcast.
Well, 'tis the season to make lists. It is the season, isn't it? Where everyone asks, you have a list, you have a Christmas list. I remember my parents used to ask me all the time when I was a kid, hey, do you have a wish list for Christmas? Now, I should prepare you now because we're about to talk about our wish list for the GOP for 2025. Very similar to my house, if I came up with a list of five things I wanted for Christmas as a child, I'm going to get one, maybe two, if it's a good year. My parents are certainly not going to look at my list of things and say, yeah, let's just buy all those. That's not how it works. And so before we go into my wish list, the guest's wish list, we have great guests, great night for you here. Let's talk about what is realistic really quickly, briefly here. We are dealing with a monumental task at hand. The task at hand is we have this humongous government. It has taken decades and decades and decades for the government to get this big and this corrupt through decades of neglect by the American people. Remember, this is all our fault. Decades of, well, I'm not getting involved in the primary. You guys catch the game? Decades of that kind of thinking has given us a large, corrupt criminal organization that presides over the United States of America. That means, it doesn't mean we can't do great things, we can, but it also means you, me, we have to be realistic about what can be done, what can't be done, and more specifically, what will be done and what won't be done. So what's on my list? First, immigration, deportation, these things. You've got guys, Donald Trump made him the guy in charge of deportation and immigration, Tom Holman, all over television saying all the right things.
So you were pretty much the first person Trump chose after he got elected. I think it was the end of that week, right?
Yeah, I believe I was.
Can you summarize in one sentence what you plan to do with the job?
Well, look, we had a discussion that night, and he gave me three rails, three things he wants me to do. Number one is secure the border.
Yeah.
Shut the border down. Number two, run the biggest deportation operation this country's ever seen. And third, he wants me to lead an effort to find the over 300,000 missing children that were trafficked into this country.
Okay. That sounds awesome. And that's a good start. Let's be clear about that. Securing the border is something they can do, but even that, we'll have roadblocks. Remember, the Biden administration, as we speak, they're auctioning off the border wall material, trying to make it so we can't even build a wall. So that, we can do it. It'll be slower and more difficult than you think. Deporting the criminals. Now, this should be fairly easy, right? It's not difficult to find out where the criminals are. We actually know where almost all of them are, especially local law enforcement. People are aware of the problem. So it sounds very, very simple. Sounds simple to you, sounds simple to me. Well, it's not as simple when you consider this, and we're going to keep coming back to this over and over and over again on the show tonight. There exists in this country, as part of that large, corrupt criminal network, a lot of people in positions of power who view their only job as stopping anyone who's going to try to change things. Remember, it's a criminal enterprise. What is the one thing criminal enterprises all do, a mafia family? They protect themselves. The communists in this country and the low-T GOP, like James Lankford, they have dedicated themselves for decades to bringing in all the third world filth they possibly can into this country. They want them here. They want the crime. They do want the crime. Remember, it helps them gain power. They want the rape. They want the murder. They want the drugs. They want the cheap labor. They want people who will eventually become voters, or at least their children will be, who have no loyalty to the United States of America whatsoever. Because if you're a politician who doesn't like the country, these patriotic citizens like you, they're a problem. So they just replaced you with 10 people from Guatemala. Then they don't have to worry about you at all. There is a huge network of people dedicated to keeping in the millions and millions and millions of people the communists have brought into this country. If you think they're just going to step aside and let Tom Homan and ICE come on in and round up criminals by the million, well, I'd say you're probably going to be disappointed. But we can begin. We can begin securing the border. We can begin deporting the criminals. We can begin finding some of those 300,000 missing children. And I'm not going to spend long on them. And it's not because I don't want to, or not because they don't matter. They matter so much. It's because that tale was a very, very, very sad one. Many of those children are gone to the darkness forever, and it's awful. And remember, Democrats did that on purpose. Okay, but that's our wish list. Secure the border and deport the criminals. However, those three steps are a good start. That's the basics. That shouldn't even be a Republican versus Democrat thing. That's a basic national thing. Securing the border should be both parties. Deporting criminals should be both parties. Finding missing children should be both parties. Of course it's not, but that's how it should be. That's a good start. We have 30, 40, pick your number, no one knows, million people here illegally. They're all criminals too. Gather every one of them up, men, women, and children, young and old, and ship them back from whence they came. And then we can begin dealing with the people who got here legally en masse, because remember, the government has spent years passing bill after bill of regulation after regulation, bringing in people legally who shouldn't be here either. Ship them off as well. That's step one. Step two, let's talk about cutting spending. Has to happen. On a long enough timeline, if they continue to collapse the dollar, then what does the rest of this matter? If we don't have any kind of buying power, then we don't really have anything, because the country will cease to provide for us any ability to get a standard of living of any kind. And the federal government spending $2 trillion a year more than it takes in makes a disaster inevitable. Let's start getting some things cut. Now, I know you're probably about pulling your hair out so it looks like mine about the continuing resolution and all this other craziness we've seen in Congress. Look, that's just evidence of what I've been saying. They have spent decades, this corrupt criminal organization, making change difficult and in some ways impossible. Listen to this guy.
The power of impoundment has been a presidential authority literally for the first two centuries, 200 years of our country. And then in 1974, Congress passed the Impoundment Control Act, which seriously limited the president's ability to cut spending. Or, I mean, think of it like this, Maria. If Congress appropriates $10 million for a specific program, and then the president can accomplish that program with $7 million and save $3 million of it, save 30%, shouldn't he have the authority to do that?
That is one of a million things I could have laid out for you about what this Congress has done, what this judge has done. Remember, the corrupt criminal organization, its only goal is to protect itself, protect the mafia family, protect the criminal organization. And so they're always slipping this into this and slipping this rule into that. And let's slip this one into the continuing resolution. Let's make sure we sign a deal so we can't fire government employees. Yes, I want Elon Musk and Vivek and these guys to go in there and slash and burn the federal budget to try to save the United States of America. If you think they're going to go in and cut $2 trillion in spending, then I have some oceanfront property in Arizona I would love to sell you. Please get a hold of the show. I'll give you a great price on that. Simply not going to happen. But we can begin. Let's temper our expectations, but let's begin. And that brings me to my final of the three. Now, there's a million things I want, but these are my big three. The Department of Justice, the FBI. I cannot put into words how important it is that these institutions be completely cleaned out, 100% cleaned out and disinfected from the communist filth that has taken them over. And that is so critical, because it doesn't matter what else happens, you can't have a free country with a secret state police agency running the justice system. It doesn't work that way. They will simply continue to arrest, assault, abuse, and in some cases kill the American citizens who are viewed as a threat to them. A free country and a secret police agency cannot coexist with each other. The Federal Bureau of Investigation must be removed in its entirety. I don't think that's realistic. Cash Patel is probably not going to take over and shut the building down, although I wish he would, but he had better get in there and start mopping up the filth out of there. And the DOJ works hand in hand, of course, with the FBI. You have a justice system, a Department of Justice, that has spent the last few years hunting down school board parents, sticking guns in the faces of pro-lifers, and raiding Donald Trump's home in Mar-a-Lago to rifle through his wife's underwear drawer. All the people who did those things are still there. If they remain there, we will never get to be free. These people, DOJ, FBI, have the power to completely destroy your life. And don't say something naive like, but I'm not a criminal. Oh my gosh, you have no idea what you're dealing with. These people can turn you into a criminal like that. Or in the very least, they'll put you through the ringer when it comes to the legal system, bankrupt you, bankrupt your family. How about selling your home and spending the rest of your days in a tiny one-bedroom apartment with your family of four because you had to unload every dime you had on legal fees and you lost your job as well? That's what they have the power to do. We cannot be free while these organizations are allowed to rampage through this society, and they must be stopped. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Sarah Gonzalez is going to join us next. Let's find out what her wish list is. We'll be back.
What happens January 21st? Where do you start?
Well, there's three rails we'll start the first day. Number one, we're going to secure the border. Number two, we're going to run the deportation operation. And number three, I'll look for these 300,000 kids. We'll find them too. President Trump's been clear. We're going to prioritize public safety threats and national security threats first because they pose the most danger to this nation. So day one, we're going to be looking for these public safety threats, arresting them, detaining them, and deporting them. And if these sanctuary city mayors don't want to help, then get the hell out of the way because we're coming. We're doing it.
You say that the left media has it backwards. Brandon, you is the bad guy. How are you the bad guy?
You know, I grew up in a family full of cops. My grandfather's a cop. My dad was a cop. And we're in a situation now where the left thinks those who enforce laws are the bad guys. Those who broke the law are the victims. Well, we're going to change that after January 20th.
Sounds good. Joining me now, my friend Sarah Gonzalez, host of Unfiltered with Sarah Gonzalez. Okay, Sarah, I have my wish list for what I want to see begin in 2025. I have my list of priorities, immigration, deportation, debt, and all that other stuff. What's the Sarah Gonzalez wish list?
Well, I'm sure it probably looks a little similar to yours, Jesse. I do want the border to be secured. I do want mass deportations. I do want them to end birthright citizenship. But I do want a little bit more than that. I want the justice to be enacted on all of the people who weaponized the legal system, not just against Donald Trump, but against all of the pro-life protesters, against the, you know, the grandmas who were waving their American flags on January 6th at the Capitol. I think that retribution is in order for Anthony Fauci and for all of the people who lied to the American population in order to shut the country down after they, of course, were involved in releasing a virus to the entire world. You see, people have forgotten about those things, but I haven't. And I would like, some may say retribution, but I would just say justice, because these are the real crimes and criminals that we are talking about. Aside from that, I would also like to see federally a ban on, of course, the transitioning of minors, both physically, medically, and then also additionally socially.
I can't believe we're in a place as a country where we even have to ban chopping off a teenage girl's breasts, but nevertheless, that's where we are in the country. Okay, so let's focus on the deportation stuff, Sarah. Obviously, I'm a cynic, as you well know. I want this to happen. I've been very impressed with Trump and Holman and these guys, how they haven't backed off of that since they won the election. There's been no race to the middle like you normally see. But what is realistic and what is not?
I think it's realistic that we start by deporting the criminals. There are plenty of them out there, as we saw during the election season when Venezuelan gangs were, of course, holding apartment complexes hostage. Although the mainstream media didn't want us to believe it, they told you, don't believe your lying eyes, it was happening. And so I think that it's reasonable to expect that we can start deporting the violent criminals and those associated with them. The people who currently are being released into the interiors of the country, who are being released by, you know, New York City, they're bringing them in once they commit a crime and they're just, you know, releasing them, what, on recognizance, I guess. And so we can, I think, reasonably expect that we could deport these people. I agree with your cynicism in the sense that I don't think that they will be able to deport everyone. You know, there's mothers, there's children that I think optics wise, the American people are going to feel a little icky about. I would say my personal opinion, for what it's worth, I really don't care what the optics are. I hope that they don't care what the optics are, because the fact of the matter is, when people went into the polling booth, to the voting booth, 80%, some polls said 80% of Americans supported mass deportations. This is an issue that, regardless of how icky it feels at the end of the day, it's an issue that needs to happen. And so I think if the Trump administration can get past the mainstream media clearly trying to target them with optics of, look at this picture of this poor grandma being separated from her children and her grandchildren. If they can get past that and just be missionally aligned that Americans, whether or not it feels good, Americans said that they want mass deportations, I think that they will be successful. But I agree with you. It's going to be a little bit hard to achieve all of it. But why not start with the violent criminals?
Sarah, let's talk about what you talked about when it comes to justice or retribution or whatever, however we want to put it, when it comes to the Fauci types. What's realistic there? Because, look, let's be honest, Fauci and Donald Trump were real, real, real close. Fauci was his guy. Trump gave him a medal. I realize that Trump has changed his tune on that now, but it's hard to believe that Trump's going to get in there and oversee the prosecution of the guy he handed the country to.
I don't disagree with you there, but what I will say is this. I think that Donald Trump has surrounded himself with the right people in his ear, such as RFK Jr., right? Such as, I mean, you've got this alliance of people who were skeptic about COVID. And if he's appointing RFK Jr. to, you know, HHS, that's a big deal to me. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., now in charge of all of these departments, including the one that Dr. Anthony Fauci ran when he was, of course, remember, the highest paid federal employee, shutting the entire country down, lying to the American public. You know, we saw that from his emails. This is now public information that he clearly was lying and knew what the real cause of the pandemic was. But so I think that it speaks volumes that he did put RFK in charge of that. Now that we, of course, have the majority in both houses, I'm just not sure how much Donald Trump has to do with that at this point, which I think is a good thing. If Donald Trump can be removed from that and not have to deal with it, and let the Rand Pauls of the world and let the RFK Juniors of the world point these things out and uncover things that may lead to some sort of, you know, justice for Anthony Fauci, that's where I think that maybe we can expect, you know, something to happen. Again, it may be far-fetched, but I'm not going to stop talking about it. I'm sure people like yourself are not going to stop talking about it, because it was just a disgusting, horrible stain on American history that just needs to be, you know, repeated until justice is done.
Sarah, you brought up the tranny stuff, and I totally agree with you on that. But do you think we've reached peak tranny in this country? And I realize it was always gross and kind of just horrifying. But now that dudes are waving their penises around in women's locker rooms, now that they're chopping up kids, it's clear that this thing has gotten really, really unpopular with even normies in America. Has the tranny madness, I realize it's still here, but you think it's reached its peak?
I do. I think that the pendulum is starting to swing the other way. Case in point, you know, you look over at the UK, where, remember, they're always a little bit ahead of us when it comes to the radicalization and the craziness and the far left ideology. Well, they're banning, you know, hormone therapy for children. They're closing down their gender transition clinics for children because they see the actual statistics. And they see that it doesn't help these kids. It actually makes them more prone to depression and suicidal ideation and, you know, all of these negative effects. And so when we see the writing on the wall with what's happened at the UK, and we see the American people clearly voting for a return to sanity, it looks to me like it's reached its peak. You know, there's only so many trannies that you can prance around on the White House lawn showing their fake breasts to the American public before they say, okay, we're done with it. There are only so many young women who have to get brain damage from, you know, competing against men. True story, I just saw it. I believe it was the Post Millennial that had this article out. A young woman suffered brain damage from competing against a biological male. There are only so much that the American people are willing to tolerate. You know, about 50% of this American public are women, are females who are being affected by this. There's only so much that we're willing to take. I think that we've had enough. I think that we saw the writing on the wall with what's going on in, you know, the UK and other places. And I mean, my lips to God's ears, I hope. I think that the American people have had enough and we're finally going to see that end.
Along with banning trannies and women's sports, how realistic do you think it is to ban women's sports entirely?
Well, look, Jesse, I mean, they're subsidized by the men's sports. So if we're looking at a purely economic standpoint, it just makes sense. Nobody watches it, and it's a money suck. I'm with you.
Absolutely. Sarah Gonzalez, best of luck to you and your family with all these deportations that are coming. Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate it. All right. We're not done. Let's talk a little spending and stuff next.
I was communicating with Elon last night. Elon and Vivek and I are on a text chain together, and I was explaining to them the background of this. And Vivek and I talked last night about almost midnight, and he said, look, I get it. He said, we understand you're in an impossible position. Everybody knows that. Remember, guys, we still have just a razor-thin margin of Republicans, so any bill has to have Democrat votes. They understand the situation. They said, it's not directed to you, Mr. Speaker, but we don't like the spending. I said, guess what, fellas? I don't either. We got to get this done because here's the key. By doing this, we are clearing the decks and we are setting up for Trump to come in roaring back with the America First agenda. That's what we're going to run with gusto beginning January 3rd when we start the new Congress, when Republicans again are in control. And all of our fiscal conservative friends, I'm one of them, will be able to finally do the things that we've been wanting to do for the last couple of years. Right now, Democrats still control the pens, and that's the problem. So we got to get this thing done so we don't have the shutdown, so we get the short-term funding measure, and we get to March where we can put our fingerprints on the spending. That's when the big changes start, and we can't wait to get there.
Oh, that is such a load off. I was worried. Let's bring in now Amber Duke. She's the Washington editor of The Spectator. Amber, that is actually a huge load off of my chest. One, he doesn't want to do this. That makes me feel good. And two, next time, they're really going to dig into this. I'm excited now.
They promise next time every time, Jesse. That's the problem. There's never a moment where they actually hold the line. But I will say, if there's three things that are good about this bill, and I'm really scratching the bottom of the well to get these, one is that there is diminished funding for the transgender youth surgeries through military healthcare, which is something of a win, although, you know, with the grand scope of this CR, a very minimal win. And then two, this goes through March. So Trump's going to be in office starting on January 20th. Let's hope that there's a clean slate come March. And with Elon Musk's influence at Doge and the general appetite of conservatives and Freedom Caucus to cut government spending, I just hope to God that at that moment, there's going to be enough political pressure on these people that they're not going to be able to pull these last minute shenanigans anymore.
Okay, Amber, what's your wish list for 2025 for the GOP that is realistic, right? Because we all want the border secure and mass deportation and spending cuts and like all these things, but what's realistic? What can we do? What are we not going to be able to do? We're not going to deport 10 million people. I'm not naive. We're not going to cut $2 trillion from a criminal organization known as the U.S. government. These things are not going to happen, but we can do good things. What can we do?
Well, I'm hopeful that we'll be able to actually pass H.R. 1, which was the original border security bill before Mitch McConnell decided to send in James Lankford to negotiate that monstrosity with the Senate. There needs to be a border security bill that does not have amnesty in it, that does not have a cap on how many illegals are allowed to come in. There shouldn't be any that are allowed in. That should be number one. Number two, I think the House will have no problem expanding the Trump tax cuts from his first term. Those are set to expire soon. And I hope we're able to get some meaningful cuts to foreign aid. Most importantly, not sending another red cent to Ukraine. Those should be top three. And then if I had to go a little bit further and ask for something that I don't think the House will accomplish appropriately, investigations of the deep state. I mean, just yesterday we had these text messages come out that showed Liz Cheney engaging in potentially witness tampering. Let's investigate all these people, actually hold them accountable. But the reason I put that off of my top three wish list is the House GOP has proven repeatedly that they are not good at holding effective investigations. They tend to start these things, get tons of media attention, and then they never really go anywhere. So that's sort of my pie in the sky wish for them, but I'm not expecting that that it'll happen, or that if they do it, it'll be anything meaningful.
Amber, what about one of my favorite things in the world, firing federal employees? Do you think we will get any kind of an actual reduction in the size of this government, which somehow has become the largest employer in the country, even though it was supposed to be limited?
God, I hope so. And even if it's not done through Congress with a changing of Schedule F or anything like that, or reducing the salaries of these people, then from the executive side, what Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy have suggested, which I think makes perfect sense in terms of attrition, is forcing people to work in the office 5 days a week. You won't believe it, Jesse. I was on my way home from Capitol Hill today. There is bumper to bumper traffic at 2:30 in the afternoon because these people in DC do not work. And then also moving some of these federal agencies outside of DC so that it is closer to the American people. It's insane that we have so much power concentrated in this little area. And it's a reason why the policies are so divorced from average Americans' concerns. Put these people in the Midwest, force them to go to work 5 days a week. Half of the bad ones are going to quit, and then the rest of them are going to be so miserable. Give them 4 to 6 months and they'll quit too. And then you have people working in these agencies who actually care about what is happening in real America, not just in the DC metro corridor.
I don't know how you suffer through that traffic every single day, Amber. I lived in that area for 1 year. I was 11 miles from my house to where I worked in DC, and there were days it took me an hour and a half to get to work over 11 miles. It's like a living hell.
Yes, exactly. And luckily I work from home right now. I only have to go in a couple of days a week if I have meetings or if I'm doing TV and what have you. But it is absolutely miserable. I don't understand how people commute every day from a 9 to 5. During COVID, it was really nice actually, because most people were too scared to go into DC. So if you were actually going to work and driving in somewhere, there was parking everywhere. There was no parking enforcement. It was like luxurious, but yes, it's returned to the hellscape that it has always been.
Yeah, in all my travels during COVID, the most masked up area by a mile was Washington, D.C., far outpacing New York City or Cali or any of these places. All right, Amber, setting that aside, you mentioned Russia, Ukraine. Obviously, we all want this thing to end. I would like young men to stop being butchered for whatever reason they're being butchered for. But what is realistic? Donald Trump is not president of Ukraine. He's not president of Russia. What can we do?
Well, I mean, it has to be as simple as this. Ukraine is only in this fight to this point because of U.S. assistance, whether it's weapons, money, whatever. So the U.S. should absolutely get a say in whether or not the war continues. And it's important to negotiate an end to this. Obviously, both sides are not going to get everything they want, but that's the nature of war. There's going to have to be some compromise. Zelensky can't continue to say, well, we're just going to keep fighting until we basically don't have any money or bodies anymore. That's not acceptable. You can't have it both ways. You can't say that you want U.S. funding, but the U.S. doesn't get a say in how you operate. Okay, great. You don't want the U.S. to be involved in negotiations, or you don't want them to force you to the table with Russia, then all funding is off the table. This has to be, for lack of a better term, if you remember, this became a huge flashpoint in one of the Trump impeachments, quid pro quo. If you get U.S. money, then we have a say in how things happen.
Amber, thank you, ma'am. I appreciate you, as always. All right. We're not near done. Let's talk a little bit more of this stuff. Hang on.
The conference itself owns this, right? And the conference needs to decide whether we're actually serious about spending. And they talk about, well, we got to do mandatory spending reform and bend the curve. But we just voted on a $200 billion shift of dollars in Social Security that's going to shorten the time when Social Security expires or goes bankrupt. We're just fundamentally unserious about spending. And as long as you got a blank check, you can't shrink government. If you can't shrink government, you can't live free.
I don't disagree with anything I heard there. Joining me now, my fellow spending, I don't even know if I want to call her a guru or just frustrated, Tiana Lo-Desher, columnist for the Washington Examiner. Tiana, my wish list is that we actually just see, you know, I'm not even greedy anymore. I'm so beaten down. Look, it's caused all my hair to fall out. I just want a dollar cut. I want a dollar of genuine cuts, not a reduction in the spending increases. I'll settle for $1 before the day I die, and that'll be a win at this point in time.
Yeah, we are fundamentally unserious. I agree with that about cutting spending. And like a part of that is you get what you pay for, right? Donald Trump ran on we aren't touching entitlements. And that means that you get a 23% benefit cut in Social Security in about 9 years. Like, that's just the reality. Now, DOGE is great as a concept to go after waste. There are things in like discretionary spending that we are wasting, but it doesn't really change the fundamental calculus, which is that in an aging society where no one is having kids, and when, you know, a lot of the illegal immigrants that we have imported over the last 4 years are simply not working, they are not working in nearly kind of the way that immigrants in previous generations have, of course we're just going to be bleeding the welfare state dry. And it's a problem that neither party really pretends to have the solution for anymore, so at least we're liberated from the delusion.
Yeah, that's probably what frustrates me the most, is the cowardice of it all. I'm not even worried about the communists. I know what they are. But the losers in the low-T GOP, many of these people know exactly what the solution is. They just lack the balls to actually say it. People love to hand things out. They love to run on, I'm going to sell you this, I'm going to give you this and give you that, and I'm going to hand this out to you. But nobody likes to run on, I'm going to start slashing and burning things. It's part of why I get frustrated with the Elon Vivek thing. It sounds great. I'm all on board. But it's Congress's job to do these things. I don't need some tech billionaire to come in. That's why I elected you dorks.
And this is why the Senate majority, the incoming Senate majority leader, John Thune, and House Freedom Caucus Republicans deciding they want to punt the tax bill down the line. It's cowardice. And worse than that, from a political perspective, it's dooming them to a certain defeat. So this is what's going on right now here in the swamp, the things that they don't want you to understand. So in Congress, the last time a political party has passed two bills in reconciliation, that is with just a 50-50 vote, right, in the Senate and the House, that was in 1997, when House Republicans under Newt Gingrich had a much larger margin. This time around, what they want to do is they want to pass a border bill that would probably be only a couple billion dollars if you look at H.R. 2, which was Mike Johnson's border bill. So not super expensive, or Kevin McCarthy's border bill, not super expensive. They want to pass that, and they want to wait on the tax bill. Well, what's going on with the tax bill? So Donald Trump's individual tax cut provisions from 2017 are due to expire at the end of next year. So if you wait to punt that bill and you don't actually get those tax cuts extended, not only have you not cut taxes, which is what half of all Americans said should be prioritized in a new Fox News poll, but also you just increase the taxes of 62% of Americans at the beginning of a midterm year. And to your point about spending cut, I completely agree that every tax cut has to be paid for. But we have so much low-hanging fruit that this is the opportunity to do it. Extending those individual provisions are maybe $2 trillion. It's very easy without even going into what we could undo from Biden administration. So the SALT deduction, that is the state and local tax deduction, which allows wealthy people in blue states with no fiscal responsibility to deduct $10,000 of the state and local taxes that they owe to Gavin Newsom or to Gretchen Whitmer or to, you know, Kathy Hochul. What we could do is we could just eliminate that. Trump capped it at $10,000. We could eliminate it. We could also eliminate the mortgage interest rate deduction, which makes it so that if you are a wealthy person with a, you know, $750,000 mortgage, you can write off and deduct some of that. We could eliminate this as well. And other economists have shown that if you eliminate that, it increases the supply of housing, and we currently have a housing crisis. Instead, blue state Republicans want to increase these deductions. So we have these easy ways of paying for the individual tax cuts, and instead, you have Rhino Republicans that want to increase these deductions.
Tiana, how do we change this? Like the American people went out and they clearly rejected what they saw over the last 4 years this November. But you and I both know how this works. People get caught up in presidential mania and MAGA this and Trump that. But then now that we won that, that enthusiasm has historically waned, to put it mildly, come the midterm elections, when it comes primary season, all that mega energy just kind of goes to college football or whatever's going on at the time. How do we change that?
This is an opportunity for Republicans to spend their political capital on something lasting. You know, Nancy Pelosi knew that she was making half of her caucus walk the plank when they passed Obamacare. And they did, right? Republicans then blew out the House after Democrats forced in Obamacare. But Obamacare is still the law of the land. Sometimes that's what political capital exists for. And if you get one big bill, if you get one big bill that increases border funding, but more importantly, more than the funding, everyone knows it's just reallocating the resources that are already there to construct the wall and mandate more deportations and stop the bogus asylum claims. If you include that by making and including the individual tax cuts, making them permanent, making wealthy blue states pay for them in the form of eliminating these two deductions I've talked about, then you can go into the grab bag of reversing Bidenomics, right? There's, according to the nonpartisan, read, left-leaning Consumer Committee for Responsible Federal Budget, they point out $3 trillion in offsets that Republicans can use in just overturning Biden's executive actions and repealing the Inflation Reduction Act's green energy subsidies. So we could get a deficit-reducing bill. That is better than anything that's on the table right now. But it's because they just want an easy win. That's what everyone's saying. That's what Thune is saying. That's what the House Freedom Caucus is saying. And so, you know, sometimes with House Freedom Caucus, they like to dress up in MAGA, put on the hat. But when push comes to shove, you just want to pass an easy bill, and you don't want to do the hard work of telling blue states, no, we're going to make your residents pay their fair share. And you know what? If that results in a tax increase because they need to pay the bill for Gavin Newsom that they've been voting for, tough.
Amen. Tiana, you're the best. Come back soon. All right. Not lighten the mood. There's nothing light about this. I'm going to give you some final thoughts next. All right, so I know that was a lot of this is what we want and probably not going to get as much. This is what we want, we're probably not going to get as much. I know that. But it's important that we understand, as we've talked about so many times on this show, that saving a country is not an event. It is a process. We didn't save the country when we won the election in November. That was a very important battle to win. We won it, it was good, and we are going to do good with it. But all is not saved now. We have 1,000 battles still to fight. That is not me trying to bring you down. It's me talking to me and you trying to, let's be realistic about things. We all, I certainly have done this, maybe you've done this as well, have had a moment where you're thinking, oh man, how great's it gonna be once we deport 30 million people and the costs of everything goes down and the schools will be better and the hospitals and the house. I've had that thought. oh, how great's it going to be when Kash Patel and Pam Bondi go in and start wiping out people at the DOJ and FBI and just firing everybody and wiping out entire departments and arresting people. I've had these thoughts. How great's it going to be when Elon Musk and Vivek get in there and they take a chainsaw to the federal government? I've had these thoughts. I've been there. It's not going to happen in that way. We can do a lot of good. I hope we do. I believe we will. But let's make sure we know we're not going to get everything on that wish list. All right? All right. We'll do it again.
This is an iHeart podcast.